Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Well, it's been a busy few weeks for both Sunil and I, but I am delighted to have Sunil Sharma back on the show. As regular listeners know, he's my contact in the United Kingdom, and we talk a lot about the politics happening there. So, Sunil, welcome back. Well, great to have you back on. Look, obviously, a lot of things have been happening since we last chatted, and one of the things I'm aware of is that Keir Starmer's government's over 100 days old now. So how's that reflection going there in the UK?
A tougher start than a lot of people expected. I'd say, naturally, being somebody more conservative-minded, even I'm surprised at how poor or how difficult the start has been. Labour are polling lower than what they were polling in 2019, which is when they received their worst vote share since 1935. So it's been a really, really tough 100 days for Sir Keir Starmer. I think I mentioned last time about the riots that had happened fairly swiftly on post Sir Keir being in power. There's been a lot of frustration towards some of the freebie stuff that we've seen in terms of his cabinet members receiving large sums of money for their clothing, going to concerts, football matches, sporting events. There's been some frustration towards the supposed tax rises that we're going to be seeing in the coming weeks and months. So it's been a bit of a chaotic 100 days or so for the Labour Party and Sir Keir Starmer, and I'm sure that they'll be working hard to try and flip this around because, yeah, it's been a very, very difficult start for them.
Has that been a bit of a shock for them, you think? I mean, they won in an absolute landslide. I mean, the Conservatives were effectively wiped out. I mean, I'd expect they would have thought to have walked into great celebration and an easy ride, but it sounds like it's been anything but.
I don't think anyone, regardless Labour or Conservative, would have imagined the Labour Party to be doing as poorly as they are at the moment, whether it's polling or their actual performance. I think the big difficulty for them from the offset, although they did, you know, rightly, as you rightly say, wipe out the Conservative Party in the last election, is there was a massive vote share of people who just A, didn't vote, and B, that didn't vote Labour. So more than 80% of the country didn't vote for the Labour Party. So I think the election results really showed how angry the population is towards the Conservative Party, more so than being rejuvenated and happy at the Labour Party. It was more of, I think, an election where the Conservative Party really, really badly lost, as opposed to the Labour Party really winning. And I think that's really been reflective in these first 100 days of the party. So, you know, they haven't really made much ground on that election win. In fact, it's been, you know, many steps backwards. And I think for them, it's now trying to find, I think Sir Keir said yesterday, some sort of stability, which is going to be really, really key, because they cannot carry on at the rate that they are carrying on. I mean, it obviously helps for them right now. The Conservative Party are not non-existent, but they're going through their own battles, their own troubles. They're trying to find their own new leader, which we should find out within the next 2 weeks. But until then, I think Labour don't have a free shot, I wouldn't say, but they almost have the time to process this not so good 100 days.
It's funny, here in New Zealand, obviously we have a Conservative, or at least a right-leaning government, different circumstances, but long and short, the government's main party, the National Party's polling's gone backwards, because they're at their first 100 days now as well. Their polling's gone backwards. The leader, the Prime Minister's popularity is going backwards. And in one poll, it said that 40% of New Zealanders, so the majority of that polling numbers, thought the country was going backwards. So I just think it's fascinating to me, Sunil, two different parties, two different countries, different parts of the political spectrum, but both going backwards after their first 100 days. And that will be causing, I'm sure, great uncertainty, both in the UK and here in New Zealand. But you mentioned the protests. I mean, has that all just gone quiet now? I mean, is there still talk about it on the streets?
Protests are not existent right now. We still get the regular Israel-Palestine protests. I don't think that will go away anytime soon. But the protests have quieted down. I mean, you know, the Met Office, our police here, one of the main superintendents in this country, has a seriously senior role. He recently was suspended for making comments saying that, you know, we in the past have treated people, ethnic minorities, we've been afraid to essentially arrest them and make any sort of quite word the that they essentially, because of, you know, stoking racial tensions, they didn't necessarily apply the same law to everyone else. So that was a bit of news a few days ago. He got suspended for saying that. I mean, there was no riots for that, but there was definitely frustration and a bit of anger, because we know for a fact, we've seen it already in lots of reports, that has been the case. But riots-wise, it's definitely gone down. There's been a lot of anger towards the winter fuel payments. So in this country, we have a sort of system that means that the people who are elderly, post the pension age, they get winter fuel payments to help them over the course of winter. Labour Party have removed that. That caused quite a lot of anger and frustration. And the other big one that's caused anger and frustration is the releasing of prisoners early, which is, again, we are overcrowded, so that they did have to do something in terms of prisons being overcrowded, but a lot of people didn't expect them to release maybe as many as they were. There's also frustration again in terms of the laws to imprison people for posting on social media racist or offensive language. But then we've seen examples of people like Hugh Edwards, who is a really famous presenter in the UK, news presenter, who did not receive a suspended prison sentence, but not actually any time in jail, despite having indecent pictures of children. So there's a lot of, let's say, mixed emotion. And I think still frustration in the UK. It's not gone quite to the level of riots as we saw at the start of their tenure, but that same feeling of frustration is definitely here in the UK, definitely.
It's striking as you speak, actually, that the synergies with New Zealand, and granted it was a year or so ago, but we also had the clearing out of prisons. The government wanted to reduce the prison population by 30%, and New Zealanders by and large were surprised who was being let out. I mean, you've got the situation, as you say, who post something offensive on social media, you go to prison, like that particular journalist, have offensive pictures and nothing happens. And the other thing has just come out in recent days, Sunil here, is our top lawyer, the Solicitor General, has explicitly said the justice system should treat different ethnicities in different ways. The one law for all just gone out the window. I mean, literally in official documents, if you're of certain ethnic groups, you are to be treated differently. So it's, for me, funny synergies. But on a different topic as well, well, still coming to Sir Keir, he's been caught up, or some of his cabinet and colleagues around, You touch on it, freebies, box seats at festivals, suits. And I mean, what's all this about?
To put it in context, why this is such big news in the UK, we saw under the Conservative Party for the last few years, a lot of attacks towards initially Boris Johnson. So Boris Johnson used donors of the Conservative Party and other various sources to make payments, for example, for the refurbishment of 10 Downing Street. So, you know, Boris would argue 10 Downing Street isn't his home. He's there for his time as prime minister. But that caused a massive uproar in this country. It was a good million odd pound, where he decided to refurb the whole of 10 Downing Street, and it was paid by a Conservative donor, not from directly from his pocket. And that kind of rhetoric carried on. Later on, we saw Rishi Sunak become Prime Minister, and Rishi Sunak belongs to an extremely wealthy family. Himself, not so much himself, but his wife. His wife's father owns one of the largest companies in the world. Is a multi-billionaire, and there were examples throughout the last 2-3 years, in particular, of the Conservative Party really being attacked for the manner in which wealthy donors were playing a part in the party. Looking at it, there wasn't too many examples, but there were definitely some examples of donors donating large sums of money and people using it for a variety of different reasons. I mean, the big one was the Boris Johnson refurbing 10 Downing Street. So the reason it's made such big news is the attacks that the Labour Party gave towards the Conservative Party. So a massive thing towards the end of the Conservative Party was, you know, the almost the sleaziness, the money behind closed doors, and that became a really sort of a really massive line for the Labour Party. Turns out within 10, 20, 30 days of the Labour Party being in power, it seems like they've been doing exactly the same thing, if not considerably worse. So they have somebody called Lord Ali, who has been contributing by the looks of things millions of pounds towards the Labour Party, all the way from dressing Keir Starmer, our current Prime Minister, our Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner, getting tickets to go to Ibiza, in clubs in Ibiza, going to football matches, going to Taylor Swift concerts, sitting in box seats, and all this sort of stuff. It's become on a mass scale of this sort of the hypocrisy that has caused massive uproar, because for a lot of people who did vote Labour, they saw it as a different way of politics to the Conservative Party. And then there's also been examples of somebody called Sue Gray, who's been catching a lot of the news. Sue Gray was part of the parliamentary committee to essentially say Boris Johnson's conduct during Partygate, during the restrictions, that he essentially broke COVID rules and he should be suspended and all of this sort of stuff. She now did serve as Sir Keir Starmer's chief of staff. A lot of people saw that was a bit of a conflict of interest. How could she be, you know, working on an independent case against Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party, and then be working for the Labour Party? Her son also works for Labour Party. So there's been a lot of, if you like, cronyism, which the Labour Party was supposed to not do because they made such a big point about it against the Conservative Party. So a lot of people have looked at what's happened and thought this is complete hypocrisy. And that's why it's been such a big deal in the UK. I don't think this will probably be as big a deal if the Labour Party had not talked about this for the last 3 or 4 years, because they did. And they've done the exact same thing, if not far worse. People are really, really angry and frustrated.
Understandable. I mean, just as a former politician, my own curiosity, do MPs and ministers have to declare these gifts? Because in New Zealand, like, there were from time to time, and not very regular, you might get invited to a rugby match maybe once a year. And as a MP, I'd have to declare that. It would have to be put in something called the Registry of Pecuniary Interest. So didn't happen much in New Zealand, but when it does, it's all very public. Is that the same in the UK? Was that all of this was flushed out in a different way?
It's all public. It's all in the public domain. I think people have found out a bit sooner because normally they have to declare it later on. But I think people have found out that this is happening sooner, that they got the information. So if they have to declare it, and Keir Starmer, for example, the box seats for the Arsenal stuff, he has declared. It's ironic because there's pictures of the previous Conservative leaders, e.g. Rishi Sunak, sitting in, you know, still I'm guessing good seats, but watching his Southampton team play in a football stadium in, if you like, normal seats. And Sikir Starmer saying he has to sit in a 10,000 pound box because of security reasons, when the previous prime minister just sat in probably more nicer seats with this, I'm guessing, security around. So there's lots of that sort of hypocrisy, if you like, and people sort of pointing out quite strongly. So that has been really on top of the agenda, if you like, for a lot of the newspapers and media outlets at the moment.
Gosh, politics in some ways doesn't matter if it's red or blue, left or right, doesn't change. But speaking of the right, and you touched very briefly at the start, the Conservative Party is going through a leadership competition. It's now down to two people, Kemi, is it Badenoch, and Robert Jenrick. My mate Tom Tugendhat on the China issue, he's been knocked out, but there's just two left. I mean, tell us a little bit about Kemi and Robert.
Well, people, if you like, on the right, this is almost a victory that these two have made it to the end. We got down to the final four, so Kemi Badenoch, Robert Jenrick, James Cleverly, and Tom Tugendhat. And a lot of people perceived that it'd be one of Robert Jenrick and Kemi in the final two and one of James Cleverly and Tom Tugendhat in the final two, because the MPs at this point decide who the final two are going to be. So the general feeling was we'll get one of each. So James Cleverly and Tom Tugendhat are considered the more centre options, and Kemi Badenoch and Robert Jenrick are considered the more right options. So that was the general perception. So it was a massive shock to see a pair of them make it to the final two. I think the more conservative-leaning people, and I think the members were probably extremely happy that these two are the final two. Tom Tugendhat, I think, displayed throughout his campaign excellent foreign minister qualities and even defence qualities. He did a lot better than people expected. When he got down to the final two, he ran a very strong campaign. I'd be very surprised if he's not in a cabinet or shadow cabinet position for either of the two who go on to become the leader of the party. But we're down to these final two. And Robert Jenrick's probably the one for a lot of people that's almost come out of nowhere. He's been somebody who's had a complete makeover in terms of even physical appearance. Somebody who's lost extremely huge amounts of weight. He's become a brilliant speaker. He seems to have worked really much on his charisma and his general way of being. He's definitely really skyrocketed in terms of the Conservative members and just general the polling across this country. A year or so ago, he was nowhere near as well known as he is now. And he's seen as somebody who wants to really take the Conservative Party, bring it some values and principles. Kemi Badenoch on the other corner, if you like, is somebody who's been a massive fighter back against some of the woke policies across Britain. She's been very vocal on that for a very long time. So talking about the consequences of being massively pro-LGBTQ, and the impact that has on family life, on schools. She's been a massive advocate for women's rights. And again, saying how LGBTQ, some of these policies can be quite negative towards women. Where it gets interesting for the pair of them is on immigration. So we have something we're a part of called the ECHR, so the European Commission on Human Rights. Now, Robert Jenrick believes that we have to leave this to allow us to really control immigration in this country, because even Tony Blair would now say our immigration in this country is almost out of control. So Robert Jenrick believes, we should leave this commission, because it means that, we're no longer tied to the European human rights laws. So it makes it easier for us to deport illegal immigrants or, people who are people are doing crimes when they come into this country. Kemi Badenoch believes it will make no difference. And this is where, again, it's tough with these two, because they are both reasonably young and new-ish members of parliament. So there is some inconsistencies in, you know, especially Kane Badenoch, who's been a much higher profile than Robert Jenrick over the last 4 or 5 years. Kane Badenoch has talked about in the past the positives of widespread immigration, and it's quite difficult for the pair of them at the moment in terms of, I think it's safe to say both will grow into the role as opposed to being ready-made leaders to become prime minister tomorrow. They're both extremely young. They're both showing a lot of promise. There is some inconsistencies in both what they've said over the last 4 or 5 years. But again, they seem to be people that could be pushing the Conservative Party in the right direction. The big question for us as Conservatives, if you like, is the reform situation. So that's Nigel Farage's party, who, although only won 5 seats in the last election, they got a significant portion of the votes, and had Reform Party and Conservative Party been together, even in the last election, the Reform Conservative numbers would mean that we'd have a Reform Conservative government even right now, despite how poorly the Conservative Party did last election. So that's a big battle for Kemi and Robert in terms of what they do with the reform question. Do they incorporate Reform Party? Do they say, reach out to Nigel and say, look, you know, we want you, your people, your members, you all belong in the Conservative Party, you shouldn't be separate to us? Or do they go out there and confront them and say, we're going to take all your vote share? At the moment, both are saying the latter, which is we're coming for your vote share. The reality is, could be something very different. There's lots of rumours of Robert Jenrick looking to tap into Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage to get them together, almost like a big three working together, which is, I think, exciting a lot of Conservative members. But there is 2 to 3 weeks left now where members will soon get the opportunity to vote, and it will be definitely a really, really exciting and interesting race to see who wins.
Absolutely. I'm on the other side of the world, and I'm fascinated. But look, Sunil, I'm so grateful as always for your time and insights from both sides of what obviously has happened to Labour in these first 100 days, and obviously what the Conservatives are up to. It sounds like quite the choices to be had. But again, thank you so much for coming on and giving us these insights. It's appreciated.
Thank you, Simon. It's great to be back, and hopefully I'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to, or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.